I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to The Functional Nerds. This is episode number 214.
And that is Patrick Hester. He is an author, a blogger, and a Hugo Award-winning podcaster, which we have to talk about that with our guest today a little later. You can check out his website, atfmb.com. You can follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I'm a singer, songwriter, and a composer. You can check out my stuff over at johnanilio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio, and we are delighted. It's been way too long since we've had her on the show, but we are delighted to have Gail Carriger on the show again. Gail, say hi.
Hi, everybody. Hi, guys.
Gail is the author of the Parasol Protectorate series, which begins with the novel Soulless. She also has a young adult series called Espionage and Etiquette. Gail, thanks for coming on today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Yeah, so this is really funny because I don't remember. It's been a while since we've had you. I asked you on a while back, and for longtime listeners of the podcast, we had a brief period where we've sort of experimented with format a couple times, and one of the things that was, so as people know, we batch record a bunch of episodes on a Saturday now, and that has worked really well for us. But what we did do for a while, we'd batch record a bunch of episodes with one guest and have like three or four episodes in a row with one guest. And we did that for a while, and that is the last time that I asked Gail to be on. And I'm like, all right, you'll be on for about 3 hours on a Saturday. And so Gail responded very politely, but essentially was, you're high if you think I'm giving up 3 hours on a Saturday.
Pretty much.
But what was funny is because you were one of the first people that I asked for that, and then I realized soon, like, no one wants to be on the show for that long. It's too much of a commitment. So that's when we sort of switched to doing three or four different guests in a row, and that's worked out pretty well for us since then. But we are very happy to have you back on the show. So thank you for coming on, Gail.
I am so delighted to be here. It has, as you said, been too long.
Yeah, Gail and I met on Mer Lafferty's podcast at Balticon. Quite a few years back now. I was the musical guest, and Gail was on, and Matt Wallace was on, and the whole gang was there. And Peter V. Brett was not on the show, but was in the audience for that.
That was a wonderful convention. I met some of the many people who will become some of my very closest friends as I kept doing conventions and stuff. So, yeah, that convention lives on in infamy in my memory.
Yes, and mine as well. And Gail is, I think, kind of a regular on the SF Signal podcast with Pat.
And one of the irregulars, yes.
Yeah, so.
That came about basically because she sent me an email, you know, that she was shouting at us while she's driving in the car. And she said, leaving voicemails and comments just isn't going to work. She has to be on the podcast from now on.
Yes. I think I was the only one who used the voicemail call-in line for ages for that. Yeah, and then finally I was like, you just have to do a panel. System. You just have to have a bunch of us on so we can all argue about this.
And I've pretty much given up on the voicemail at this point. No one else uses it, so it's gone.
And I don't have to anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's fun. It's sort of not a way that people really go about interacting, I think.
I put it in place because Slice of Sci-Fi does it. And, and they've been pretty successful with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is Slice of Sci-Fi still running? I haven't really keeping up with it.
Cool. Summer and the crew still do that every week. Yep.
Cool.
That's
cool.
Crazy.
Yeah, they've been doing that for a long. Is Casey on?
I was a devoted listener for years to Slice of Sci-Fi, and eventually I just couldn't keep up with them. They did too much a week, and I was like, I can't. Yeah, it's overwhelming.
Yeah, that's a thing with podcasts. I just tweeted and Facebooked this because I have some ideas for some sort of a little project I want to do, and I don't know if it's going to be more of a blog or audio thing or whatever. And I was sort of asking people, you know, how do you get your information, your media? Do you like, you know, blogs? Do you like emails? Do you like podcasts? Do you like, you know, what video? And the response I got is people love podcasts, but everybody's behind. I'm 5 weeks behind on this one. And I used to get like really, I mean, we're very consistent. We do a show every week. Occasionally we miss a week, and I used to really get kind of bummed or whatever if we missed a week. But I realized, I'm like, you know what? From talking to people, so many people are 3 weeks behind. If you miss a week, it's fine. It's less kind of building up in their archive. So an occasional week missed, I don't get a lot of complaints when we miss a week. If anything, they're like, good, it'll help me catch up. So that just seems to be the way a lot of people are with podcasts. And it's funny because everyone talks about video, but in my responses from people, they're like, yeah, video's fine, but it's, you know, I'm not going to sit there and watch a 5-minute video. Like,
yeah,
I'd rather read an article. Or podcasts are good because you can listen to them while you're doing something else,
exactly.
You know, so it seems like that's at least the people in this genre or in this maybe age group or something.
I was going to say, I think it's our age bracket is like that, actually, because I think the young ones are quite into video, but I'm really not.
I'm a youngling.
You're a baby.
Yes, you're a baby. I find that's sort of the way that people are with that stuff. And so that's that. You know, lots of stuff to talk to Gail about, but I think maybe we should get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Gail, do you want to go first? Do you have something ready?
Sure.
What's your pick this week?
So I've been doing a lot of research into various new possible business avenues, I suppose you could say. And one of the books that just kept coming up in all of the like self-publishing podcasts and self-promotional podcasts and things is Rachel Aaron's 2K to 10K. And I just picked it up, and it's essentially just a I think it started as a series of blogs. I think it's like 99 cents. It's super inexpensive. It's not a very long read, and it's just like a three-part kind of template to improve how much you can write in any given space of time. So it's got nothing to do with like carving out more time or anything like that. It's literally, how do you make it so that the time you spend at your computer speeds up your word count. And so I've been reading that book, and I really recommend it. It's
awesome.
Nonfiction,
yep.
But it's very short, and she's a good writer, so it's really comfortable to read it. I wish at times it was a little bit more textbook-like in that there were bullet points and things like that. But I'm highlighting it. I'm reading it on my unspecified ebook reader, and I'm highlighting the bits that I think are super relevant to me, and I'm going to go back. And I'm starting a combination of her and I think it's Headley's Blood Red Pencil. She has a layering technique for writing outlines, and so I'm trying to apply some of their techniques to my latest book, and so far it's going really well. So if you're a writer, pick that one up. It's 2K to 10K by Rachel Aaron, Aaron.
What's your process? I mean, how long does it take you to churn out a book?
Well, as a general rule, I'm a 2,000 word a day girl, and I write pretty clean already, so I'm not quite sure how many of her tricks are really going to work for me, because my problem is more that I can't literally physically can't type for that long at a time. But I have a new project coming up where I have to write 4,000 a day or I'm not going to make my deadline. So wow. I'm hoping some of her techniques are. And her technique is essentially a way to backfill and really organize your thoughts in outline form. So outline form takes a longer part of your writing process. But each day is a cleaner writing day because you have all of the details sort of worked out. So you don't pause to puzzle out what's going to happen in a scene or anything. So, like I said, I just started the technique, so we'll see how it goes for the next book. I could theoretically write one book every 6 months, and that's what I have been doing. But other parts of the writing life are taking over now, and I need to pull back from that. Schedule's too much for me.
Is the next project, I don't know if you can share with us, is it more fiction? Is it nonfiction? Is it, because you said it's like a new project, so I don't know, a different thing.
No, the project that I'm using these techniques for is actually for my second Custard Protocol book, which is the second book in my new adult series.
Okay.
So I have, and then I'm kind of done with all of my contracts finally. So I have the final book in the Finishing School series, I need to do an edit pass and then proof pass, and then that one's going to be done. So I've already turned that one in, basically. I am one of those writers who finds the actual rough draft creative process the hardest part of writing. Just getting the words out is the hardest part for me. So as far as I'm concerned, Manners and Mutiny is pretty much done because I did the hard part. Mm-hmm. And then Prudence is done. It's coming out in March. And then Imprudence, which is the second book in that contract, is the only one I still have to write. And at that point, I'm out of contract. And that's the juncture at which I'm starting to think about, what do I do next? What do I really want to do? For the first time in 7 years, I'll be able to just do something I really want to do and I'm really passionate about. So, and I'm really into the idea of controlling the entirety of the creative process. So, which should tell you that I'm thinking about indie or self-publishing, just to see what it's like. So it would probably be maybe some novella-length stuff, some slightly shorter stuff that traditional publishing would not be interested in anyway. So okay. That's kind of where I'm going. Great. But we'll see. It's years away, so everything can change.
That's great. Yeah, we had Rachel on the show a couple months ago, and she did mention that book. And
oh, did she talk about that book?
Yeah, she threw it.
And frankly, I would not have picked up the book if I didn't also like her writing. So, you know, I will totally judge a nonfiction book by the fiction that came before it. And her Paradox series, which is a trilogy, it's like a military space opera, but it uses a lot of urban fantasy techniques. I read all three of them, and I really loved that trilogy, and so I was like, "All right, I'll take a look at her nonfiction."
And awesome. you've talked before about trying to play in that sphere and kind of do some space opera-y, sci-fi kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, I had Crudrat come out, right. And I need to write the second half of that one, and also those I would like to put them into print eventually and stuff. But I don't want to print the first volume without at least having a strong outline for the second one, and being really ready to go on that, because I don't want people to have to wait a long period of time between those two books, because the first one kind of ends on an exciting note. So and I need to be out. I need to be done or at least relaxed in the Parasol Protectorate universe, because the voices of those two worlds are so completely different that mucking about in the Crudrat universe really affects my ability to re-enter the Parasol Protectorate universe. So so for right now, the space opera stuff has to be put on a little bit of a hiatus for me. And that's just the way I am as an author.
Sure.
Sadly.
Cool. I do have questions about that, which we will get to later. But Patrick, what is your pick this week?
Well, it's interesting. This is slightly influenced by Gail. The Gilmore Girls is now on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember watching this show, and this is a show that I you wouldn't think that I'd be into.
Mm-hmm.
But I was. And now I'm rewatching it, and it's because of the humor, because of the snappy dialogue. I love the snappy dialogue.
I'm like, dialogue. The dialogue on that show is killer.
Oh, my God, it is. And what I tell people, now that it's on Netflix, I've been telling all my writer friends, it's like, go watch The Gilmore Girls. If you're struggling with dialogue, if you're trying to figure out voice, if you're trying to do these things and make people, you know, sound unique, go watch The Gilmore Girls, because it's so good.
It is written dialogue. Like, nobody in the universe speaks the way they speak on that. But if you were reading it, it would be like, this is amazing. The script writers are fantastic.
Yes. And so it does remind me a little bit of Gail, because Gail does that in her books.
Thank you.
My coworker, she was watching that. So I'm an instrumental music teacher in an elementary school, and my coworker, who's the chorus teacher, was like watching that during lunchtime one day, and I was, we were talking about it, and she's like, oh, and I'm like, are you working and watching that at the same time? She's like, I've seen all these like three times. This is just, this is sort of my like comfort thing in the background while I work on something else. And so I know she loves that. And my coworker, so I'm 40, my coworker is 24. And the other day I realized she was born in 1990. And I'm like, that is bullshit that you are born in 1990. That is bullshit. And I like to...
That's very painful.
It is painful. I'm like, I was just getting comfortable with being okay with adults being born in the 80s. But now you're born in 1990, where I was like well into high school already. That is crap. Anyway, I totally off the top. topic. But anyway, my pick this week, as I often do, I love checking out new music, and I'm quite a fan of a lot of the records. I'm so old. Some of the albums that are put out by this Italian record label called Frontiers, and they put out a lot of. You know, if you wanted the latest Night Ranger record, you can find it through this record label. But they have a band, they have a lot of younger bands too. And one of the younger bands that they have, it's an awful name for a band. It's called Crazy Licks, but Licks is spelled L-I-X-X. It's a horrible name, but I'm going to give them a pass because they're a Scandinavian band. And it's just great. I love it. It's just like this great sort of hard rock 80s kind of stuff. But I saw a little behind the scenes video of the guys in this band who are all in like their mid 20s. And they have their Scandinavian accent. And I just get like a real kick out of that. I don't know why. I just really do. So I'm always kind of in love with these Scandinavian bands. And I just love that they still make this kind of music, even though I don't think there's much money in making this kind of music. You could sort of do it in Europe, sort of, but I don't think there's even a great living you can actually perform. You can't come to the United States and perform that stuff. No one's going to come see it except for me and another old dude or two maybe. But
you and Peter Aurelian, yeah.
Oh, yeah, me and Peter Aurelian would go see that, so absolutely. But not a big audience for it here, but I really like that album. It's really good. It's a horrible name, Crazy Licks. It's horrible. It's a terrible, terrible name for a band. But if you like a lot of like 80s hard rock and metal, you would enjoy this album. So it's up on Spotify if you have that, and you can go and check it out there. So that is my pick this week. Okay, yeah, you know, I want to, before I forget, I do want to ask you, you mentioned your science fiction universe and the, you know, that you're sort of not working on that now, but I know you did some like an audio drama for that, or was part of that. I would love if you would tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Well, I'd already written the first of the books, and then I kind of just sort of set it aside for a while, but I passed it off to a friend of mine who's an audio producer, and he totally fell in love with it, and he basically said, just let me do a full cast audio production. You don't have to sell any other rights or anything. And I basically said, well, okay, I'll do that, but I would really like you, the voice talent, to be paid for your time, because that seems like the smart way to do it. And I'm not so enthusiastic that I'm going to front the money, frankly. And so we kickstarted it. And it was great. We it's exceeded, I think, twice over, two and a half times over our goal, which turned out to be a good thing because there were some production problems. And it was an original full cast. So all the voices were done, but the narration was still read. So it was basically everything on the page. And there was an original score for the background. We got an amazing talented composer to do the whole score for the whole thing. And it came out, it was awesome. It was a totally unique experience. And then some of the bonuses were, I have four short stories that are around and about on the interwebs. And so the bonus was to full cast all of the short stories as well. We're still not quite done with all of those. So some of the stretch goals we still haven't reached, but we're almost done with the short stories, and then there'll be some blooper reels and a couple of other things. But a lot of voice talent cursing my name because I tend to, I don't even realize it, but I use a lot of alliteration and really complicated vocabulary that all sounds alike in sentences just because I love wordplay. And it turns out that's a little challenging to read out loud. But yeah, it was a very fun experience, and it's very, very cool. Although I'm now constantly fielding emails from people who want to read the book, and I'm like, well, actually, we just did the full cast audio. That's all. Mm-hmm.
You know, people that the voice talent that you spoke of, I know a lot of those people. Actually, I met a lot of people that do that through Balticon. It seems like there's a contingent of people that go to Balticon that are involved in the sort of VO work. And
that's the pool we drew from a lot of, yeah.
Yeah, they are very passionate about it, because you know, I'm sure when you get to the higher rungs of it, there's, you know, a living to be made. But I think a lot of them do their own projects out of pocket do it because they love it. And it's something that niche of people really adore. And what I found, you know, we were talking a little bit about podcasts, and it seems with audiobooks, You know, I still prefer to read rather than I've listened to some audiobooks too, and I like it, but I sort of when I think about reading a story, I like sort of just sitting and reading, and I don't want to be doing something else. That's just my personal preference. But I know a lot of people that a friend of mine who it was about a year ago, I was telling him, you know, because he had still thought about audiobooks as being, you know, CDs that, you know, you get 8 CDs, you know, from the library or whatever, and you listen to it. And I'm like, oh, no, there's a thing, and, you know, you can get an app, and there's, you know, one called Audible, and there's other ones, too, and you just get them on your phone. He's like, interesting. And now he was a big reader to begin with, and now I think that's 90% of his book consumption is through audiobooks, yeah. And I think that's the way there's a segment of people that love the audiobooks and some people prefer just the straight one reader, and some people like the full cast audio. I don't know. Obviously your project was a full cast audio, but if you listen to audiobooks, what's your preference, Gail? Do you like sort of the
I grew up on audiobooks, and I remember that full cast is just not as common as just a reader. But I remember listening to a full cast adaptation of The Hobbit or The Lord of the Rings, came in a wooden box, and loving it. Really adoring it. I also like a really good reader, but it has to be a good reader. And one of the things I don't like is authors reading their own books. when I was really into audiobooks, I used to be like, if the author's reading it, if it said read by the author, an excited type, I'd be like, nope, not for me. I think a professional does a better job, but with some notable exceptions, of course. I mean, there are some authors out there who are fantastic readers, like Gaiman and Mary Robin Eckwall and so on. But most of the time, I'm not into that. But these days, I'm pretty much entirely a podcast consumer. And that's partly because I use podcasts to get all of my news, to keep up on the world, and humor. I listen to a lot of stand-up comic podcasts and stuff. So, and the industry, because there's a lot of podcasts like this one that are just very informative as to what's going on in my business world. And so I utilize podcasts for all of that. And that just doesn't leave me enough time for audiobooks. I don't commute very much. And in California, it's a thing that commuters, anybody who has to commute more than half an hour is listening to audiobooks.
Yeah. Well, I'm the same way with audio. I listen to a lot of different podcasts, and I'd prefer to listen to that over audiobooks because I kind of feel like you need to pay attention to the story a little more. And I usually listen to podcasts while I'm driving or doing something else. And a podcast is better because if you miss a little something, it's no big deal.
Exactly.
A little more off the cuff, whereas it's like, wait, what just happened? Like, you might miss a key detail in the story. That's why, for me, I prefer to actually just sit and read.
Agreed, yeah. And when I was super into doing kind of art, and I used to be a potter and sculpture and that sort of thing, then an audiobook would be great because, I don't know, like the creative hand-making side of me, the rest of my brain can totally pay attention. But most other tasks, if I'm puttering about, I need to be able to tune in and out. And for me, podcasts are a much better vehicle for that.
Cool. You know, I don't. If you don't want to talk about this, it's okay. Patrick can then edit this part out. But I did see today, because you'd mentioned something about your e-reading device that you did not mention by name. And I saw today, and again, if we want to edit this out, that's fine, that Hachette and Amazon settled. So I don't know.
Finally.
Yes,
there was a lot of drinking a couple nights ago. I was out with a couple other authors, Scott Lynch and Wesley Chu and Elizabeth Baer, and I was the only Hachette author there, but boy, was I drinking a lot because I just learned that they'd celebrate it. And it was the last day of my tour. I followed it, of course, because I'm a Hachette author, but I have stayed off of the bandwagon of arguing about it with everybody.
Right.
Part of that is because, to a certain extent, I wasn't indie published first, but I feel like I came out of indie because I'm such a fan of podcasts. And early podcast fiction writers were really on the early indie bandwagon. And so a lot of my friends are independent authors. And I applied a lot of the techniques that independent authors use to my fan base. You know, I'm very accessible online, and I always respond to time I get an email from anyone and that sort of thing, which are very and very present on social media, which is something that indie authors are very good at. And so I didn't want to weigh in, and I actually was really particularly unhappy with the behavior of certain parties on both sides. Nothing to do with the two companies arguing with each other, but just that I felt like some of my fellow authors were misbehaving a little bit, and it's a little embarrassing. Mm-hmm. And people were just being super mean to each other, and it just made me very unhappy. So I pretty much just kind of followed what was happening and didn't engage at all. Mm-hmm. But it certainly it impacted me. My last book didn't get on the New York Times list because of it. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, like, oh no, poor Gail. But I was still like, oh well, there you go, mm-hmm. broke my streak.
Yeah.
So it certainly has had, and who knows? The book could suck, and that's why it didn't get on the list. It could have nothing to do with Amazon. But for both of my publishing houses, I'm a very strong ebook seller, mm-hmm. stronger than most of the other authors, because I have a very large romance readership, mm-hmm. and romance readers were one of the first to jump on the ebook bandwagon. And whether you like it or not, most ebook readers are via Amazon. Mm-hmm. So cutting Amazon out of the mix, at least for pre-orders, was very, very impactful. So it was tough. It was a tough 6 months. I was scared more than anything, and not even for myself, because I am one of those authors who has a great safety net and lots of other options should my career tank. Mm-hmm. But I was scared for a lot of the mid-list authors and just for the industry as a whole, because everyone was so angry.
Mm-hmm.
It's not nice to be around that.
Yeah, well, I a couple of thoughts that I had about it was that when this was kind of, you know, you mentioned, you know, behavior of certain people on both sides, and when it was really a big thing, you know, when I saw that story come up a couple days ago in my, well, by the time people are listening to this, it'll be a few weeks ago now, I was like, oh, awesome. And I immediately like tweeted it and Facebooked it and all that. And two things about it. Number one, I only saw like one or two stories about it on the blogs. And when I put it on Facebook and Twitter, you know, a couple people commented and talked about it and were like, oh, yeah, that's cool. And that was it.
Yeah,
like,
it's sort funny. Of
like, the resolution was like, I liked when they were arguing better. It's weird yeah. how we are. Like, it's like, ooh, we want to see people fighting. And it's like, no, this is great.
I don't know.
I was sort of a little kind of bummed out that we didn't talk more about the resolution of, I mean, I guess maybe all the talking was done. I don't know, but I found it kind of funny.
I have a theory on this. Okay. And I always have theories. Like, people ask me about like why steampunk is so popular when it is. And I have a theory about that, but I have a theory about everything. And I think, more than anything else, this whole debate was a struggle of ideologies. And it was a struggle of ideologies between a West Coast ideology of high tech, efficiency, fast production, low market costs, all that sort of thing, which is very much iconic of my neck of the woods. I live in the heart of the Silicon Valley area, and so I'm accustomed to that culture. You know, that's the culture where you're expected to stay at work until, you know, 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night. You know, that's just the culture I've lived in. And it's diametrically opposed to traditional publishing and New York, which has a very different mentality about everything. It felt to me like a psychological debate where people were arguing all of these logical fallacies and strawmans and personal choices and personal vendettas and this is what happened to me and this is why it's awful. Whereas in fact it was this major struggle of ideologies with this very traditional, like, this is how we do it because we've always done it this way. Mm-hmm. And there's something good and noble invested in that on one side of the United States, and on the mm-hmm. other side of the United States is this mentality of newer is always better. And I'm not saying either camp has it wrong or right, but that's what was going on. The resolution was just a resolution that we might have expected all along, which was two very large companies hashing out a contract that's now solved. Mm-hmm. And there was no one side of the paradigm won over the other side. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's sort of disappointing for the two camps as a result, because in the end, what was brought home is that it's two companies who don't care about the ideology, mm-hmm. and they don't care about the authors at all. They just wanted to get a contract. We were the shrapnel that in that fight.
It kept cracking me up because of the way things are portrayed. It's like the giant versus David, right?
Yeah, there was a lot of ideology being flung around.
Yeah, two gigantic multi-billion-dollar companies are fighting it out. Which one is the little one?
Right. Right, you know, and Gail brought up a great point about the New York versus West Coast, East Coast versus West Coast. I'm in New Jersey.
Are you going to start talking about Tupac now? And
absolutely, you stole it right from me. No, but I go to various events in New York from time to time, and I've gotten to know, besides a bunch of the authors that are in the New York area, I know a lot of the publicists and editors and such there. And it's really funny because I really like all those people, and I talk to them all the time. And but it is funny because Gail brought up the, you know, on the West Coast, people work until 9-10 o'clock at night. Sometimes I'll email somebody on a Friday and I'll get the return mail like, I'm going to be out of the office till Wednesday or whatever. It'll just be like 5-day weekend, take it, you know, and I guess that is pretty.
Yeah, I'm not. It is common in publishing, and it certainly was when I originally signed up, that most major publishing houses during the summertime in New York do not work on Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
And literally Little California, like ex gamer girl, was like, what?
Yeah.
What? You just don't. Who doesn't work? What are you doing? Like, it literally completely flawed me. Like, what do you mean you don't work on it? Like, on the one hand, fantastic, more time with your family. That's awesome. But it was such an antithesis to everything I expected out of life. I was like, really? There's definitely cultural differences.
Well, and it's a changing landscape. And
it really is.
You know, because I've been teaching now in the same school for 18 years. It's hard to believe, but I've been teaching that long. It was my first job out of college. I was 23. I'm 40 now. I'm in the same school. And someone brought it to my attention a few months ago, like, you know, when you get 25 years in, you could, you know, start collecting a pension. I'm like, I'll be 48. That's not that far from now. And like, I don't know if I want to, you know, my job, everybody's job is hard. My job, I work with little kids and it's hard, and it gets harder as I get older. And I don't know if I want to do this until I'm in my 60s. So I've given other careers a thought, and I was talking to my wife about it. And you know, I know a lot of these book publicists, and I'm thinking like, yeah, that would be cool. And my wife was like, well, what is it like? And I'm like, you know what? I don't know what it's like anymore, because I think it's changing. And I think, you know, 10 years ago, a book publicist's job was one thing. And I'm like, I don't know what that job is now. And I don't know what it is a few years from now. It might be a totally different job. It might be a different title by then. You know, their responsibilities could be totally different. You know, I think these houses used to have teams and teams of publicists. I think it's much fewer now than it probably was, or they wear more hats now. Nowadays.
Yes. I think Orbit may have three, and Little Brown has maybe two or three publicists. And then there's children's publishing, there's also a team that handles mm-hmm. libraries and schools, but mm-hmm. of like three people, a team of three, you know?
So Gail, you know, you're just coming off tour.
I apologize for my croaky voice.
No, you sound just fine. And
you sound
and
a lot better than I do.
I know. You sound kind of true. But you know, tell us about your tour and tell us what you're on tour for, or what you are.
Oh my goodness! Well, I was on tour for Waistcoats and Weaponry, which is the third in my finishing school series, my young adult series, and I think is my best. Actually, I really genuinely adore this book. It's kind of like my greatest escape train robbery sort of book.
So fun.
Sophronia, yes. And let me see. I had, so I'm in young adult, and young adult is a different style of touring rather than doing a bunch of bookstores, which is what I'm used to in adult. You tend to do a lot more libraries and school visits as well as some bookstores. So I landed in D.C. and did a couple of events. I did a school and a library event, a launch event, basically. And then I went to World Fantasy Convention because that was ostensibly the reason I flew to D.C. And then they were like, oh, we'll put you on tour at the same time. I was like, okay. And then once World Fantasy, and then the last day, the final day of World Fantasy on Sunday, I actually went and did an event at the Spy Museum in D.C., which was great, which is perfect because my book's about spies. And they were super excited to have me. And then I went on, and then they put me on actual tour. So then I went to Boston for 2 days and Chicago for 2 days. And I just got back yesterday, which was Friday the 14th. So, yeah, so I started on Tuesday the 4th, and so 10 days, landed on Friday the 4th. It was tough. It's rough. That kind of touring is very difficult.
When you go, just on your body. When you go to schools and libraries, do you still do the full-on Gale?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yes, of course. Always Gale.
The hair, the hair, the glasses, the dresses.
The hair, the glasses, the whole thing. Yep. All gussied up.
All looking fabulous.
Oh, the kids love it. They love the fashion elements in my books too. So, you know, it helps to be fashionable if you're going to write books that have a lot of deadly fashion in them.
Were you in like middle schools or high schools or younger than that even? Or?
Well, a couple of middle schools. I've done some high schools as well in the past, but I don't think I had any. And then boarding school, which had a whole range, all girls boarding school, which is very appropriate to my books, that had a whole range of ages all the way up through high school. So, a range. And then I have teenagers that come out. And then I did a teen room thing, which had high school, mostly high school, at a big library. And then I had a couple of teens come out to my author events, which isn't very common, my evening author events, which is not common. Teens are just not, I don't think they're just not as into like meeting the author behind the book. They just want to read the book.
Cool.
And read it all over right. And over 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 and over.
Yes.
Well, that is awesome, Gail. Well, I think we're kind of getting to about the end here. So what's, you know, why don't you let our listeners know what you got out there now that they can check out and maybe let them know some upcoming con appearances or anything like that?
Sure. Let me think. So Waste Codes and Weaponry is out now. That's 3 books out of 4. The fourth one comes out this time next year. So, and then there's the Parasol Protectorate series. That's all done. If you want to read a completed series, that's an adult series out there. And then I have a new series starting in March. That will be my next book. That's March 17th, the Prudence series. I'm super excited about that.
Yay!
Back to the adult world. Yes, Dear Prudence. And then I'm doing a couple steampunk events next year, which I'm super pleased with because I didn't make any this year. So I'll be in Cincinnati and in New Jersey for the Steampunk World's Fair.
In Piscataway. I used to live in Piscataway. I'm not far from now.
Yay!
When you come out, we'll have to meet up. Yeah, because that's
yes,
not
Yes, we'll have we'll have something. We'll have coffee or something. Yes, that will be fun. I can't remember. I'm sorry. I can't remember what the Cincinnati one, the World Steampunk Expo or something like that. Like conventions, they're all named very similarly, and so they all run together in my head. But the Cincinnati one is going to be super exciting partly because Professor Elemental is there, and I'm a huge Professor Elemental fangirl. So I've never seen him live, and I cannot wait. So. Yeah, I'm going to be in New Jersey for the National – not New Jersey. I'm going to be in New Zealand for the National New Zealand Convention, and I'm actually cutting what was going to be a longer vacation short and flying back from New Zealand just to go to Cincinnati to this convention, and I totally wouldn't have done that except that Professor Elemental is also a guest of honor. I was like, that's how you guys got me. Mm-hmm.
Very cool. That's great.
Well, that's next year. It's going to be good. It's going to be fun.
Cool. And is it just GailCarriger.com, I believe?
Yeah, if you search Gail Carriger, the first thing that comes up is going to be my website, Carriger. And I'm on pretty much anywhere you want to find me, including Tumblr, and it's always just Gail Carriger, Twitter, Facebook, a couple of things on Facebook, and I recommend on Facebook that you don't follow me. You either follow the fan page or join the Parasol Protectorate books group for discussion, because I'm not very good about responding on Facebook, and I'm almost out of friends. So I'm like, almost tapped out.
Yeah.
What a horrible problem to have.
I know.
No, it's terrible.
I have too many friends. It's so hard.
Too many friends.
That's great, Gail. Anything else?
Oh.
I mean, you don't have much going on.
I read an awesome series recently called His Fair Assassin series, which is by Robin Lefevre's, and it's great. So I recommend that. I know we only got one pick of the week, but if you want a fiction pick, the first one is called Grave Mercy. It's late 1400s Brittany is the setting for all female assassin trilogy, and it's done. The third book is out. So
awesome.
So cool. John, I foreshadowed on SF Signals podcast that occasionally I would be asking people what they're reading.
Mm-hmm.
And it yes, never fails.
And so now I'm always prepared.
She's always prepared, and I never ask her. And she's like, I have a book. I'm ready. You have to ask me.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Patrick, what are you going on this week?
Same old, same old. ATFMB, Kirkus Reviews blog, and SF Signal. Go check me out there.
Sweet. Yep. You can just check out my music, johnanilio.com. Follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. And that has been it. Gail, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, everybody. Have a great week, and we will see you next time.
Yes.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.